Welcome to the courtesy flush,
by Armand Zaidi.
I'm here today joined by Nick Linsmeyer. Is that how you pronounce your last name?
Meyer?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Nick Linsmeyer. Okay. Got it.
And I'm here with... Armand.
Yeah.
Zaidi.
Yeah, Zaidi. There you go. Zaidi.
Mm-hmm.
Armand Zaidi. That's how you pronounce my last name. But yeah, I'm here in your apartment in Koreatown. Got a really, really nice apartment.
Just moved. I was living in a couple of apartments before this that were cockroach infested. So I was kind of saving up and, yeah, I'm looking for a new job, so this is actually super motivating for me to get an actual job.
Yeah, so it doesn't deplete your savings?
Exactly, yeah.
That's an interesting, like, package pickup thing I saw earlier when you were picking up your messed up iPhone case.
Oh, right. Yeah, they had that at a building when I lived in D.C. It's called a package concierge.
Package concierge?
Which sounds like a weird gay porno, you know? It's some French guy who comes in and services your cock, but... This happens to just
starring
be,
Ron Jeremy.
Yeah, although he's canceled now. Who would I think?
But why though? I never.
I think he raped a woman.
He raped a woman.
I'm pretty sure it was a serious thing, a sexual assault.
Damn.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends, they used to just see him around L.A. all the time. They always like took pictures and like the caption was always like, "Oh, just met my geometry professor."
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they didn't, you know.
Geometry professor? Is that a reference to
his work?
Giant penis?
No, it's just his work, the role playing.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I never watched any of his work.
I came across his work. He's like, I don't know. He's like one of the big names. Like,
sure.
I feel
sure.
Like you say Ron Jeremy, you know who it is.
He was at the beginning. He's kind of like the Rogan of porn because, you know, Rogan's been doing it forever. Ron Jeremy was doing it forever since the start of commercial porn, I feel like.
Yeah, and like he's like a conventionally unattractive guy, and
mm-hmm.
just seeing him have sex with so many beautiful women, it was just like, wow, good for this guy.
Yep.
That's Ron Jeremy for you. But yeah, package concierge. See, that's the annoying thing. Like, Nick, you bought the wrong iPhone case earlier. There's mm-hmm. just so many iPhones now, man. Pluses, pros, maxes, and
right.
whatever's.
Yeah, I must have bought the wrong year because I don't have a plus. But
I think you bought a max and you have like a normal.
I guess. I mean, I could have sworn I didn't buy a max, but what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? You got that 5% cash back credit card from Amazon. Thank you, Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. Oh, man. We're all about consumerism now. We're talking. By the way, I don't feel too bad about upgrading to a nice apartment. I was in the shitty 100-year-old apartment. But it's kind of nice to be in a nice apartment for once because I feel like I'm incentivizing Graystar real estate builders to build nice apartment buildings in a city. You know, it's the opposite of urban sprawl. Even though I don't have any equity in this apartment building, it's, you know, it's nice to just be in a center of humanity and in civilization. I think this fucking, the whole LA area is already way too big. So
yeah.
It's nice if we can, you know, the subway goes just a couple more stops in Koreatown and then it's going to go to Beverly Hills and eventually it, you know, connect with LAX and all this stuff.
Oh, so. Wow. LAX, man. That's a trip. My dad works there. But yeah, like it's a trip, man. LAX subway. Jeez.
Well, it's going to be a train out there. I don't know if that's going to be underground, but...
Yeah, Elon did something underground
right.
in LAX.
It's called the Boring Company. Have you been out there down to Hawthorne?
Redondo Beach area. You know, I have... No.
Back when that was a new thing, like in 2017, I drove down there with an ex of mine, and we saw the... That had a little portal where... You could drop down basically, and you know, they took Teslas down there and they tested it out, which people mocked a lot. But I mean, it's a practical solution. It's easier than having flying cars, you know?
Yeah, I don't know why people make fun of Elon. I mean,
why they make fun of Elon, but
no, I mean, I like you have to push like society and technology in ways, you know, like when you see like futuristic films, like sci-fi films, someone had to start. Making the change, you know?
Right.
Someone had to be bold enough to make changes that are, you know, controversial, I guess.
Yeah. Speaking of which, are there any technologies that you've seen in sci-fi movies that you think are going to come online soon that you're excited for or scared for?
The Blade Runner self-driving cars. That's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
It's already happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like a lot of people don't have confidence in that. Like Gen Z, we love electric cars and everything, but millennials and older people, they're kind of suspicious about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe older millennials. It's funny. I feel closer to like you as a comic whatever than I do to like a 40-year-old. You know, there's some, you know, some people consider millennials like starting in the early 80s, and some of those people who just only like retro leg warmers and stuff like that. I don't know. It's kind of weird to me. I've always been more into technology and what's new. And even as like a kid, I liked gadgets and stuff. The James Bond stuff, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that came true, you know.
Who'd you grow up with? Sean Connery?
No, that was like the 1970s and 60s. I watched all the Bond films, but the new movies were Pierce Brosnan when I was young.
Pierce Brosnan, yeah. That makes way more sense.
Mm-hmm.
GoldenEye.
Yeah, that was in the video game, N64.
Yeah.
Did you ever play that?
Yeah, on Nintendo. Yeah, I did as a kid. Inverted controls and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember that.
I liked to... this shouldn't say anything about my character, but I like to play multiplayer and just blow up the other character with a bazooka. And maybe it's telling that I would always pick as the opponent a lady, and I would blow up a lady. Maybe that's how I became gay. It was probably GoldenEye that did it.
Yeah. That's how you... It's just subconsciously. You're just like, fuck this person. Just keep blowing them up.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
By the way, that character, that woman in there, kind of looks like Lulu Jovovich.
Dude.
Do you remember the haircut in the GoldenEye game?
Yeah. She's probably never going to listen to this podcast, but she is definitely the most attractive comic I've ever seen.
Both internally and externally. She's so nice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I have not seen her for months, and I would like... encounter again. I haven't been doing much comedy in the last
couple
months.
I would like to encounter her from afar. I don't really need to speak to her. She's a very attractive and funny comic. Good for her.
Yeah. You can edit that out if you want.
No, I'm keeping it in.
All right.
I'm very open on this podcast because the people who listen, they get an extra dose of me. What's not like, I guess not ingenuine. It's the word.
They like your authenticity.
Right? Authenticity. They get a deeper look into me. Yeah.
They like you fawning over a woman comic who is...
way older than me.
Way older. Like a few years. I don't know. Well, not way older. She's maybe...
30?
No, she's in her mid-20s.
Whoa.
Come on. Now, you got to edit that out.
Really?
Saying she's 30?
She's never going to come across this. Oh, it's okay.
Whatever.
It's okay.
It's up to you. It's your funeral.
It is my funeral because, you know, things on the internet, they stay in forever.
Oh, yeah.
They do stay in forever. But, yeah, like, she's a really funny comic.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah. Good for her.
Mm-hmm.
GoldenEye. Yeah, I grew up, like, when I was younger, I did watch the Pierce Brosnan films. And then, you know, definitely the most relevant one to me is Daniel Craig, the modern James Bond. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see the new one?
Not the latest one. No, have you?
No, I haven't. I'm not dying to see it. I mean... I'm more of a Mission Impossible guy myself.
Oh, I didn't keep up with those.
I mean, I just love Tom Cruise. What are your thoughts on Tom Cruise? He's a very interesting fella.
I have very few thoughts about him. I don't know. He was never my thing. I never saw Top Gun. I maybe saw part of one of the Mission Impossibles. I think we had it on VHS at one point, but I don't think I even watched it.
Oh, VHS. Probably the first one. Or the second one was like the most 2000s movie I've ever seen in my life.
Why is that?
It's just so cheesy, so 2000s.
Give me
Limp Bizkit.
Oh.
Is the soundtrack.
Nice.
Just the cast. It's just his hair. And like if you see a trailer for Mission Impossible
Giant
2.
Giant suits? Do they have the huge, like...
Oh, yeah. Ving Rhames wore that, like, the giant suits that's not, like, fitted or...
Yeah.
Like, the LeBron James draft class type.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny, those suits... They're not even like cool big suits. Like there's a period of, I don't know what could be now retro cool in the 80s, but there's like a period, I think of the show Boston Legal with James Spader and William Shatner. They had giant, shiny, weird, colorful purple ties and stuff and pinstripe and That was a fun show. Did you ever encounter that?
No, but I do know who William Shatner and James Spader are. James Spader, Ultron, and the guy from The Office.
Mm-hmm.
And then William Shatner's, I don't know who he is in Star Trek. I'm not that big of a Star Trek
Captain fan. Kirk. I've never watched Star Trek, but it's an iconic thing.
It's Shatner with Patrick Stewart, right? Is that the same series?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he was Spock, right?
No.
Though that was Leonard Nimoy. Never mind.
Leonard Nimoy, that's definitely Spock.
I think
with
we
the
should
ears.
Spend this whole podcast trying to remember the cast of Star Trek, which we haven't seen.
Yeah, Chris Pine.
Oh, but hey, back to William Shatner for a second, because apparently he went to space, and I remember hearing an announcement of that. I have not seen a single clip.
Really?
Yeah, have you seen any clips of it?
I have not seen any clips of it.
You know, I think Bezos really wanted that to be like a big viral moment among people.
Oh, to send a Star Trek, to send Captain Kirk
exactly,
to space?
Exactly, the biggest publicity thing, but it's weird to me that I haven't seen any
clips. Jeff Bezos is a fucking insane guy. I can't believe what's the Virgin Galactic's name? What's his name?
Oh, Richard Branson.
Richard Branson. I can't believe him and Bezos went to space within weeks from each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a dick measuring contest. That's
for sure.
It's pretty cool though. Like, I mean, in terms of humanity wise, not humanity wise. Just, you know, just the fact that a billionaire can just say, you know, fuck it, let's go to space.
Yeah, I mean, it's a human thing. Like, we're giving Bezos his profits by shopping on Amazon, and
yeah.
I don't buy Virgin Records or anything, or fly Virgin Galactic or Virgin Airlines.
Yeah.
I guess he's making money off of somehow. By the way, did you watch? I watched some of the footage of the Virgin Galactic flight, and I liked that, like how much production value they tried to put into it.
Yeah.
They had Richard Branson walking on the tarmac like at pre-dawn. He rode his bike, but he's like one of these 70 something guys who wants to still be a 20 something guy, so he's got the hair,
yeah,
and he's, you know, tousled hair, and it seems like his back has shrunk. He's one of these guys,
yeah,
so he's like too short for his frame, and his arms are swinging around like an orangutan. He also has kind of the hair color of an orangutan too. He's a pretty simian dude.
Is he actually a virgin? Like, I think I've heard him say something about that.
Oh, I'm sure
on a talk show. It's a joke. Yeah,
it's clearly a joke.
Yeah, but because I'm sure he has kids or something.
Yeah, he must.
Yeah, let me Google that, man. I gotta Google that, dude. I wish I had a Jamie to help me Google that.
Jamie, pull that up, would you?
Jamie, have you seen Rogan live before in comedy?
I used to watch him at the store, you know, when he lived here. I wouldn't specifically seek him out, but I had seen him on Netflix, and you know, I think he's all right. He's not I don't feel very strongly about him, really. Either way, I think now he's saying a lot of irresponsible things.
I Googled this and look what popped up. Look, this is a nice circle back to Ron Jeremy.
Oh, Richard Branson says he did not remember alleged sexual assault. Huh. I guess there's a lot of accusations. That's from CNN Money from 2017. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that was right at the November 2017. That was the height of the Me Too movement.
Me Too movement? Yeah.
Well, he's rich enough he could probably pay to get rid of any accusations.
Let me search up Ron Jeremy. What's up with him? I need some new news on... Oh, damn. That does not look good.
Yeah.
That does not look good. Look at the first headline. Ron Jeremy faces 20 more sexual assault charges.
Wow, from August of this year. And, yeah, the pictures of him getting sentenced were pretty harrowing. I mean, his face just looks terrible, but he's got like...
I wonder if his dick still works. Like, he's pretty old. Like, he must need, like, Viagra or something.
I would imagine. At that age.
Yeah. That must suck. It's like having a gift that slowly goes away. He's 68. He faces over 300 years in jail. Wow, he's in. He's out for the count.
I mean, they could chop his head off like in Futurama and have him, you know, cryogenically kept alive or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
If they want to keep him. That would be an interesting form of capital punishment. Rather than killing people, they just preserve their bodies for 300 years to have them serve out their sentence.
Yeah. Futurama, like, I remember that was a good show. I watched it as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Fry just falls into that cryogenic chamber and wakes up.
Mm-hmm. How many? I don't think I ever watched all of it.
Yeah,
but
I just caught like a few episodes as a kid, but I remembered enjoying myself watching it.
One of my first impressions was actually Zoidberg
Oh, it's Zoidberg. He was kind of like an old Jewish guy, but he was actually a shellfish. It was a weird accent. It was a fun character.
Yeah.
Very unusual.
Zoidberg.
Do you do any impressions?
I don't know. I really don't. I'm not an impressionist guy. Like my comedy, if you do, when you see it one day, it's a lot like Anthony Jeselnik. It's like very dry,
mm-hmm,
punchline, just you know, very dry humor.
Sure.
But it's hilarious. Like Jeselnik's a master at that, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen him before, Anthony Jeselnik?
I bet I have. I've certainly seen him his comedy specials. He's not for me. People will talk to me about comedians, especially non-comics. And I don't like most comedy. I'm lucky that I like most of my friends' humor.
Yeah, yeah.
Not all my friends' humor, but most of my friends, I think, are very funny people. Ryan the Cable Viewer, Nick Borsellino. I'm Josh sure Edelman. You're funny. I still haven't seen it. Yeah, Josh Edelman. But when it comes to professional comedians, I feel like a lot of it is just serving a very specific market niche, for whatever.
I feel group. Like once you're rich, you stop becoming funny because you don't have to try as hard.
We're going there. Dave Chappelle. He's never been my guy, but even people who like him. He's a
preacher now.
Yeah, he's a preacher. Even people who like him. I was hearing from some comics the other day. I won't say who they are, but I was talking to some comics, not fucking household names, but they're a little bit more successful than I am. And they were just talking about how Dave is basically given so much love and credit from the audience that he'll say something that's pretty much a concept or a premise. It's not a joke. And he'll get like applause laughter, like the combination, like people like, oh, like a shock value, a little of applause backed up. But it's not a guttural, involuntary reaction. It's not stand up in that sense.
Yeah, like I know what you mean by that. Like when you're that, like, it's like things are a little bit warped for you when you're that famous and you just say, hi, everyone, and people just start laughing and crying and clapping, mm-hmm, and that's all you need to do to make people laugh. Like, he doesn't have tough crowds anymore. People are just happy to see Dave Chappelle. That's it.
Yeah.
And he could just talk and not say any jokes, and that's a sad. I mean, that's basically what the new transgender closer thing was.
Yeah, I only watched,
I remember laughing, but it was interesting just to see him talk.
Yeah, I didn't. I watched 22 minutes of it and I couldn't take it. I actually watched other stand-ups, like an old Louis special, an old Sarah Silverman special, just to get it, like a few minutes of each, just to get the rhythm for comedy again, because it was so off to me. With Dave, I feel like Jerry Seinfeld, actually, he had this thing he said in the documentary, The Comedian. Did you ever watch that?
No, I didn't, but I did watch like something about him on Netflix. It was just like a anniversary thing or something where he was just celebrating his comedy life.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I saw that too. Yeah, he had a special out a few years ago.
Where he had like all his jokes. First notes,
yeah,
all on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was this documentary made in the early 2000s, and in it, Jerry says, it basically follows him around. And, well, it's funny. It concludes with him with Bill Cosby saying he's the greatest ever. So that was cool to see, funny to see in context now. But he also said something that I think doesn't always ring true. He said that even the best comedians of the world, himself included, they will get maybe a minute or two of love from the audience. And at that point, after that, you have to have real jokes. That might be true sometimes, but I think a lot of audiences are just drunk and excited and they're impressed by celebrity, you know?
That's literally what I saw at the Improv when mm-hmm. Craig Robinson dropped by.
Oh, right.
It was like nothing he was really doing was funny, but the crowd was laughing like fucking. I'll say Anthony Jeselnik like just dropped the best joke ever.
Yeah, Anthony's not my guy, but I'll say about Craig, I laughed a couple times because he was genuinely funny, but he was also doing a lot of songs and
playing the
piano.
It was a drop-in. We weren't there to see him for comedy, mm-hmm. But it was just interesting seeing how like he's part of like one of the most popular sitcoms of all time, and I'm just looking at him right there, you know?
Yeah.
The Improv, it's an interesting place.
Yeah. For my money, I thought Harlan Williams was the funniest comic that night.
Yeah, I honestly thought the host was great.
Oh, okay. Gary Cannon. Yeah, he did well.
He did really well. Like,
he's good at engaging the audience.
Very, very good energy. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, he was entertaining to see for someone at the Improv, yeah.
he called out almost, it seemed like every fucking person in the audience, he's like, oh, and you look like a Harlequin baby, or you look, hey, what are you, for a salesman from Cincinnati? He had a weird thing for everybody. And look at this guy over here, he's eating cheese.
I got called out as well too. Not by him, I got called out by the redneck dude.
Oh, what did he say about you?
He was like, oh, you look like where's Waldo or something. And I was just like, yeah, sure, I don't get that joke.
Yeah, I guess you have glasses. So that's,
yeah, like I was like, I don't have stripes.
You
have
hair and glasses. Those are two things.
I am a male man with fucking glasses. Yes. That was a long shot of a joke, but people laughed anyway. Yeah, drunk people are very easy. Very, very easy. It's not even like, I want to see, like, I want to do like an experiment of like the same crowd sober and drunk.
Mm-hmm.
It has to yield some very different results, man. There's for no sure. way. But yeah, Nick, like, you are the guest on my podcast today, and I wanted to ask you some questions about your life, that like things that I don't even know about. Tell me about your life in Hong Kong, man.
Oh, well, let's see. I studied abroad back in 2013. I was in college and spent a semester out there, directly enrolled in the Chinese University of Hong Kong. And it was a great experience. You know, at the time, it was just super exciting to meet the locals, who were some of the nicest people I've ever met, and I've kept in touch with some of them. It's just so accommodating. Like, it's a huge city. It's very dense. It actually has the densest neighborhood in the world. It's called Mong Kok. It's a fun name.
Nice.
Yeah, but anyway, it, you know, it's a city where most people don't have very much space at all. Like a family of four will live in a two-bedroom apartment.
Whoa, you don't want to say that. Can you say that?
What?
They're going to go and shoot that kid, bro.
No.
The one child rule.
Oh, this is Hong Kong. It's different from China.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not going to be like Channing Tatum and I don't speak Mandarin to apologize to Xi Jinping. But anyway, honestly, it's amazing how quickly the situation in Hong Kong and Taiwan has changed in the last 7-8 years. Certainly in Hong Kong, you know, they used to have freer elections, and now they've had more and more influence from the Chinese Communist Party on who the leader is and whether people can demonstrate freely and fairly. Man, this is so boring, but anyway, it's like,
no, you're good, man.
It's profound, and it's sad because these are people who just want to live their lives as freely as they can, and more it's being taken away from them. So when I wasn't encountering that bleakness, because it wasn't so bleak back then, it was really easy, because Hong Kong is like right in the center of Asia. It was really easy to travel around Asia. So you can like take a ferry to Macau. You can take an hour or two flight to Taiwan. You can go to Japan and all these places for like the cost of cheaper than, in a lot of cases, a flight within the U.S.
Oh, wow.
Domestic flight. So it was like very easy to travel around. So I went to like 7 countries or so, I think, and just met a lot of really great people.
You travel a lot, man. You seem very cultured. Like, yeah.
Yeah, my parents, we never were big on, like, you know, splurging on too much stuff. But even to this day, like, I hate buying shit on Amazon because, like, it's always wrong. I don't know. There's always a problem with a product. It'll break. But an experience, obviously, it'll last forever and it'll, you know, be a fun thing to think about at night. So, not jerking off to my travel memories. That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Armand, but yeah, we always traveled as far back as I was a little kid.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. Hong Kong, man.
Do you guys travel? Do you and your family growing up?
No, not really, man. I've gone to some places in Southeast Asia a couple times, like when I was younger, but I haven't traveled that much.
Where in Southeast Asia?
You know, Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, 3 main Desi countries.
Mm-hmm.
Been there.
Do you have family in all three?
Or? Yeah. It's an extensive family, man.
How many cousins do you have?
You don't even want to know, man. I don't know.
You haven't counted?
No.
That's crazy to me.
You can't even count.
Certain families you can't count. I have 5 cousins.
My,
it's extremely easy
my
to count.
My dad has like 8 siblings, and my mom has like 2, so it just multiplies.
Mm-hmm.
Those you know, siblings have kids and those kids have kids. And
if you were me,
I don't know all of them. I haven't met all of them.
Would you, if you were me, would you be afraid of the future of the white race?
So there's a show called Foundation, and it's about Earth. Or not even Earth, just humanity 10,000 years later.
Mm-hmm.
There's no white people. There is one white guy, and he is the emperor.
Oh, wow.
So they it's the white race that's lived on. But yeah, like interracial couples and just, you know, white women. And
I'm joking, obviously.
I mean, I'm not scared, but like, you know, white people.
I'm in an interracial relationship. Beige. We're trying to have an interracial baby, but it just doesn't seem to be working. So, despite our best efforts. But, no, I was just joking. But it is crazy to me. Like, and I think it all comes with development. Because my grandpa, my mom's dad, was one of 12 kids. Irish Catholic. You know, and there's a certain point of socioeconomic status where people are poor. He was poor, grew up in Boston, you know, all Irish people. 100% Irish. Like, you're much more likely to have a lot of kids when you don't have any money. Because, I don't know, it's a kind of a biological thing. You want somebody to live on, and you want to make sure that, you know, you have a good family and they can provide for one another, and
yeah,
in a lot of cultures, for the parents when they get older.
Yeah, my dad's side, like the grandparents, they grew up poor and they, you know, splurged out 8 kids. That's always funny to me. Like the thing I told you in Al LaBelle, like the, like I've never seen them have any public like affection or intimacy, but then they just splurge out 8 kids. Like, yeah. How's that even a thing? Like, first off, you can't afford them.
Mm-hmm.
Second, like, wow.
Yeah, and it's an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah, you're just ejaculating in there minimum 8 times.
Yeah.
That's just funny to me, man.
Yeah. Do you have any jokes about that?
I mean, I have really good premises all on my phone, and I really need to conduct them into really nice punchline, just...
Yeah, what's your writing process? Like, do you...
I have so many great ideas on my phone, and I can definitely craft out a 10 minutes of this if I really, really try. This is all my notes of stand-up, and check mark means I've tried it.
Mm-hmm.
Blank means I haven't tried it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Have you... Like, when you write that stuff down on your phone, are you sitting down deliberately, like, I'm going to take 10 minutes? Yeah.
No, not the Jerry Seinfeld way. Yeah, I know Seinfeld does that and, like, how the fuck do you do that?
Something like 2 hours a day.
That's so hard.
Yeah, and then, frankly, I've done that before. I've gone through periods where I write almost every day and, you know, for whatever, half hour, 2 hours at most. But it's almost all that shit is very formulaic and it doesn't have a ring of
poignancy
or truth or whatever. And then I'll just be hiking or walking or just doing something, showering. Those are my best thoughts, the ones that come to me randomly.
Those are the best jokes, yeah, for sure. Like, even off the, like, the hardest laughs I've received is actually just off-the-cuff jokes that happen in the moment.
For sure.
Those are the best.
The audience wants to know that you're paying attention, that you're present, and you're not a fucking tape recorder just reciting something
that's
predetermined.
Yeah, that's a thing. But yeah, like those jokes, like I've tried them, and it's just like the ones where you write down punchline and you calculate everything. Like, it's a good method that like a lot of older comics use, but nah, like once an idea comes to you, you just write it down and then you workshop it. I feel like that's the best way. Yeah, but like I really do want to execute those jokes and work hard at it and build like a good 10 minutes eventually. I would just want to have a polished 10 eventually, you know.
You'll get it.
Probably that's probably my goal for 2022. Like I'll probably try to do that like within like a few months of 2022. Yeah. But yeah,
is there any particular place you want to perform those jokes when you get 10 minutes?
Open mics and shows, platinum package maybe one day.
Sure. Yeah, that'd
be great. One day, who knows, man. I don't want to just barge in on your show.
No, that would be excellent. I want to see you perform stand-up first. You could be, for all I know, just a con artist who pretends to be a stand-up. But honestly, at 19, you're so early in the game that I wouldn't worry at all. Like most comics I know, I feel like got started sometime in their 20s. I got started at 25. And yeah, man, to start out when you're 18 or whatever, that's crazy.
Yeah. Thank you, man. I'm just, you know. Malik B gave me some good advice about just like if water keeps hitting a steel beam, eventually, one day, it's just going to penetrate through it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, you know, you just got to work at it. It takes time.
I think that's a great analogy because I've a lot of shit I've read in the last year. People talk about the fact that in a person's life, you can be doing something for years and years and years and not make progress. You know, it's not a linear path where you can see that you're making headway. But then all, you know, it's something where you might put in years of effort into stand-up and you might hardly improve at all. And then one day you wake up and something has clicked in your brain and you're so much quicker, so much better able to just on the spot think of something. And, you know, you don't know when that'll happen. You just have to keep putting in the effort, as you said.
Yeah. It just takes time and effort. That's all it does. Just keep at it. That's the best advice for anything, honestly. Mm-hmm. Takes a lot of time. Yeah, so Hong Kong. What were your experience in Washington, D.C.? That's where you went to college, right?
That's right. I went to American University, which people will say, is that even a real school? And yes, it very much is. It's the alma mater of Judge Judy, of Gary Cohn, who was Trump's first economic advisor and head of Goldman Sachs. Jordan Belfort, the famous fraudster.
Wall Street.
Yep. And Michael Cohen, Trump's personal lawyer. So some very esteemed alumni, and Goldie Hawn. Anyway, it was good. I studied business and was there, you know, for a few years after college as well. I really like D.C. It's a fun city to be a young person because there's public transportation. You don't need a car. You can take the subway. At least at the time, you could take the subway everywhere. Now, I don't know if you saw last week, they reduced service dramatically in D.C. where
oh, wow.
You have to wait up to like 20 or 30 minutes regularly for a train.
Yeah, I think John Barenthal was talking about that.
Oh, who's that?
He's in Wolf of Wall Street, funny enough.
Oh, okay.
Punisher.
Actor?
He's the angry, really masculine dude in like every movie ever. Okay.
Interesting. I'll take your word for it.
You've definitely seen him.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, DC's got a lot of unique stuff. It's got the embassies. Honestly, I think that's the most... Oh, yeah, that guy. The most unique part about DC is all the cultural stuff you can see for free, museums. And you can go to, like, the Austrian embassy or the French embassy. I wanted to go to, like, the UAE embassy or those weird secretive ones, but they typically don't let you.
United Arab Emirates, man.
Yeah. But, you know, they have free concerts and food and interesting stuff, so that was nice. And then after a few years, it gets to feeling small after you've been doing that. And I would go up to New York City a lot because you can take the bus for super cheap for a weekend. But did that enough. I got it out of my system. I thought I'd move to New York, but I don't know. Have you ever thought about living in New York? I feel like a lot of
New York, nah, man. I feel like I would love to visit New York, but I just can't live there. Yeah, like, I can't imagine living in New York. First of all, it's just so expensive. Second of all, it's so crowded.
Yeah.
Very competitive. Mm-hmm. But I do, like, it's New York, you know. It's like one of the, it's like, I don't want to say it's L.A. on the opposite coast, but, you know, they're comparable, I feel like.
In some ways, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like big metropolises.
If you're
going
to be a comic and you want to be in commercially viable stuff, it's helpful, I think, to be in one of those two cities.
Yeah, L.A., New York, Chicago, and Austin, I guess. That's happening
yeah,
now.
Yeah, obviously, more and more, you can live wherever. Yeah,
shout out Rachel Cuthbert.
Yeah. Cuthbert?
Cuthbert, I don't know. Rachel Burt.
Sure, Rachel Cuthbert.
Cuthbert. Good for her, man.
Yeah, honestly, I haven't kept too close of track. I know I saw a post she was in the Amazon rainforest, but what is she doing in Austin these days?
Oh, you know, everyone moved to Austin. That was the Joe Rogan effect. That's an insane effect that I a couple comics I know, like Dylan Sullivan.
Right. You say everyone, but like, I don't
know. Not everyone.
It was an interesting cross section.
It was a fair handful that I saw move out to Austin right when Joe Rogan moved, which was, you know, coincidental, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it wasn't coincidence. It was cause and effect. I think for the most part, he brought a lot of energy with that Vulcan Gas Company. I still haven't been there, but I was talking to Sean Riley, who was on the Platinum Package on Sunday.
Yeah.
And he moved there. He might come back at some point or move elsewhere, but he was just saying that, you know, it's not really a club. It's more of like, I guess they do EDM music there. Have you been to Austin?
Nope. Texas, I have, but not Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sounds like, I don't know, it's a very lopsided comedy scene in a number of ways. It's, you know, I think it's pretty white and male, for sure. It sounds like there are only a handful of women comics out there, which, you know, LA is already skewed enough in that direction. Most markets are. So, to have, it's hard to imagine even a more white male thing, but...
When did you start stand-up?
I did my first open mic in the summer of 2017. A friend of mine had done it before, and I was thinking about it for a long time. Since I was... I probably had it in the back of my mind ever since I was a kid and watched like...
SNL
and Comedy Central, you know, specials, that sort of thing. Something mix. I forgot what the comic remix or whatever the heck. Those stand-up clips were, and you know, I just didn't have the self-confidence to think I could go into the arts. I studied business because it seemed practical, and my dad does business, and it's like, oh, you know, follow in your dad's footsteps type of thing.
Yep.
But eventually, I was working in D.C., and I was talking to my family about it, and one Christmas, my mom and sister bought for me a class to do improv, which... different from stand-up, but close enough, at the DC Improv, where they have a lot of stand-up comedy. And I did improv for the first time. And that, I think a lot of people start out, a lot of stand-ups initially do improv because it's like a group thing and you don't have to write for it and you're just getting comfortable on stage. So that's basically what I did to start back in, 2015.
Oh, wow. You have a lot of experience under your belt, like on a stage.
Oh, yeah, a bit. I mean, I really didn't do improv that much. I kind of got sick of it after a few months. It just felt like a lot of the same in jokes, and for the most part, the only people to go to improv shows were friends of people taking improv classes. So, you know, it didn't seem very widely accessible. It's not like people watch improv specials very often. Although
Ben Schwartz,
I know, I just started that a few days ago, and
Thomas Middleditch.
It was all right. I don't know. It wasn't terrific.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it, but like that's a pretty popular form of improv, I guess. I haven't even seen it, and those are two actors that I like, and says a lot.
And that's literally the one example we can think of. There's only that one, and it was
Barry,
filmed 2 years
Barry,
ago.
HBO.
Oh, the show Barry?
Yeah. Him in the show, he's an improv school.
He's in acting school.
It's not improv?
No. Oh. Fictitious example is inaccurate.
That was a reach.
It's a great show, though. We should keep watching it.
Yeah, I'm behind on my HBO stuff. There's so many streaming services. I'm really focused on Apple TV right now.
Honestly, I don't know how anybody has time for anything anymore.
Yeah, honestly, like, it's insane, dude. Like, that's why, like, when you asked me earlier, like, do you have a girlfriend or you think, I'm like, dude, I can't even fit things I like into my schedule. Like, dude.
Well, that should be a top priority.
Yeah. Yeah,
above and beyond
myself,
watching Succession. I think you should, you know, find a nice lady out there.
I mean, I don't know, man. I'm just too young for that.
Young? You're at your hormone peak.
Yeah, I mean, hookups and stuff. It's just not my cup of tea.
Not that you have to hook up, but I don't know. I just...
just relationships.
I was deeply in the closet still as a 19-year-old, but even still, I was chasing women. I was so horny that I could fit... like, I could squeeze my sexual desires to try to be attracted to a woman. It was more just about being personally intimate with a person, you know? Like, I lost my virginity at 23, so...
to a woman, or...?
To a woman.
Wow!
A couple times, yeah. I could hardly perform, because it just... like, again, I was excited by the personal connection aspect of it, but the physical thing... I literally went in the bathroom and looked at gay porn, like, in the middle of sex. But this was a woman who hadn't... she was the same age, she was 23, she also was a virgin, and she... so I broke her thing.
Yeah.
And there was blood, and it was just gross, and we both didn't want to finish, so it happened. Yeah. And then we tried again and another night, and then it was same deal. There's more blood. It's like, it's a big cherry. I didn't realize how big
cherry, yeah.
Fucking cherries get.
My sexual experience is very, very low. Don't have much experience in that regard.
Yeah.
I mean, don't know. I'm not really chasing it, dude. I guess.
Not that you have had. I mean, clearly, I revealed pretty late losing my virginity. Did you lose your virginity?
No. Not
for you. Good for you. Don't feel pressure to.
No, I'm definitely. I'm not even like that into it, man. I don't know. Like, just relationships aren't for me anymore, man. Like, I've been there, done that. It's just...
What? So wait, like... You sound like you've been fucking married and you had, like, a wife and kids at home.
You've been, like, through the trenches, man. But, like, it's just, like, I don't know. Like,
so, did you have a girlfriend in high school or whatever?
Yeah, I did. It's just so time-consuming and just a lot of work for... I guess, I don't know. Maybe I just haven't found the right person I like. Dad has like similar values as me, but
sure.
Nah, man, it's not my cup of tea. I just like doing things that I like.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think so much of a relationship is finding a person you can vibe with, and you know, if they are too needy or whatever, they have very high. I mean, I use that word needy, but they might just have a different expectation, and maybe there's a guy out there who wants to spend the same amount of time. I think statistically that's improbable, but it can happen. And when it comes to relationships, I think what we really, as a culture, I just finished this book called Dedicated by this guy, Tom Davis or something. And he talks about how we basically live with a couple generations, millennials and Gen Z, of infinite options, you know? People feeling like they could swipe forever on apps, which you really can.
Yeah, you really can.
But you gotta just, at some point, you gotta dedicate yourself to somebody or something in life, whether it's a cause or a person or all these things.
I mean, like I said, in my day-to-day life, like, I just don't have many encounters with women.
And so. Again, you're young, so it's not like you have to worry about it, but I just find that an interesting discussion because there's so much... angst around, is this the right person for me? Is this the perfect person? When people...
It's a whole hunk of crap, man.
Well, yeah. Well, exactly. Nobody's going to be perfect. And we look for too much from individuals. There's a really... He makes a very nuanced critique of the culture where, you know, he's not saying all is going in the shitter and all is going perfectly. It's like in the middle, he says that people... They expect too much from individual relationships. They don't have these group relationships that they used to. For as many problems as like the middle of the 20th century had in the United States, people were more civically engaged. They were part of clubs more. Mm. They helped out their neighbors more. They knew their neighbors more. Now people, you know.
I don't really know any of my neighbors.
It's weird.
But they're all old people, so I don't really know how we'd connect. But, you know, just being on a first-name basis, it's like some sort of relationship would be cool.
Yeah, you mentioned the age thing, and that's also something that has dropped way off is intergenerational friendships or even encounters.
Yeah.
Like, most old people, they only talk to old people, and that didn't used to be the case. So, they're kind of isolated, and, you know, if you have a sharp old person and they're only around people with dementia in a nursing home...
Yeah, I got to be friends with Patty now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm lucky I have some older comic friends and other friends who are non-comics who I know from work and stuff. But, I mean, yeah, I think we as a society just have to maybe a little bit more deliberately think about how we spend our time because so much shit gets thrown at us, media and obligations. And we as consumers, like a big part of our fucking culture is us feeling like we have to make the perfect decision. And this book talks about that. Like, we are... Basically, a lot of us can, and I fall in the same trap, we can be slaves to feeling like, I got to check all the reviews and find the perfect end table, you know, for my bed or the perfect fucking mattress or whatever it is. And at a certain point, it's just a stupid object, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's not going to change your life like it should, like the amount of time you invest in it would indicate.
Yeah. I feel like a mattress is pretty important. But, like, you know, I know what you mean.
I mean, at a certain point, though, you just get fucking consumer reports because that's a nonprofit service. Because otherwise, all these fucking... This is going to sound conspiratorial, but it's just the truth. Like, a lot of these companies pay for good reviews online.
Yeah.
So you need an independent third party that isn't fucking corrupted.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't really use Amazon much, but I've seen the reviews. And just a lot of reviews on a lot of websites. Like, if you, I've tried, like, if you put in a, like a 1-star or 2-star review, it just doesn't show up, like, on the website for a lot of things.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't tested that out before.
I've seen a YouTuber try that, but
even on Amazon.
I'm not sure if it's Amazon, but, like, you know, like, if you go to a website for, like a custom website for, like, I don't know, Lovesack or something. I'm not bashing Lovesack.
I don't know. Is that, like, sex toys?
No, Lovesack is actually just a beanbag chair.
Oh, okay.
That's all it is, yeah. It's an interesting name, right?
Yeah.
How does it sound? Does it sound
good? I'm just double-checking the levels. I thought your microphone was slightly closer, or mine was slightly closer than yours, so...
No, I mean...
I don't want us to... Mine to be too loud
in post. I mean, it's very easy to fix.
Okay, cool.
But yeah,
you know, we sound about right.
Yeah, shouldn't be any issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me pull out my notes. So, how long you've been in Cable Time podcast since the start, right?
Yeah, since the start of the pandemic. Although, nearer to the start, we were doing like Google Meets and stuff, just chatting with people, other comics, back in March of 2020, and that kind of evolved to phone calls. Ryan, the cable viewer, and I would talk on the phone a lot, and me and other comics, but we started recording podcasts last year.
Ryan's like one of the only people I know that has like a stage name for comedy.
Yeah, there's James Demon. Are you familiar with him?
Oh yeah, the guy. Yeah, I've seen
Satanic,
him. Satanic.
By the way, I had one of the weirdest encounters. One of the first times I ever saw him was at West Side Comedy Theater. I think it was right before COVID lockdown, like February 2020.
And he was on Platinum Package.
Oh, yeah, he was. This was at West Side Comedy Theater. I think it was the same night Sandler showed up and did a set at the open mic.
Adam
Sandler.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, the Sandman. But before that, James Demon is on stage and he's telling these demonic jokes going, yes, and I would have sex with the devil. I don't know, all this weird stuff. And then there's an earthquake and the woman I'm sitting at the table with, I said, Liz, is that an earthquake? She's like, yeah, I think so. And he doesn't even notice. So it almost felt like he was summoning the fucking underworld.
Yeah.
And he just was, you know, in charge of it.
James Demon, man. What a guy.
A character.
Yeah, stage names. Ryan the Cable Viewer. It's like literally the only guy I know that does that. I was on the Cable Time podcast yesterday. Nikki and Ryan and Nick, you guys are a good group of people.
You know, it's a fun conversation. Who knows when that episode will go out? It took like 2 months to release the Jackson Banks episode because we have our set tasks. And with Ryan, you kind of have to lay down the law. You can't let him... you know, you can't let him push you around in terms of his responsibilities. So you have to just make sure he does them. So it's like a dog who pees in the floor.
It's a big kid.
You probably shouldn't do that anymore. You probably shouldn't put the dog's face in the pee, but that's what I had modeled by my dad growing up.
Ryan's an interesting character.
Mm-hmm.
I can't pinpoint when I've met him or when I've seen him, but like I feel like I've known him for a long time because he's been in the comedy game for a bit. And I just always remember like his name being on Slotted and him on Fourth Wall and mm-hmm. Bert's Back Room and Flashback Comedy Mic, Third Wheel Mic, and so many mics. And
he's extremely memorable. Honestly, between him and Ian Iveruso, they are some of the best comics in LA at branding themselves.
Yeah,
for their lack of skill, they have a lot of name recognition. It's very fitting that Ian...
I would have thrown Callahan Welsh into that, but I miss him so much.
And I say lack of skill. They're very skilled comedians, but, you know, they're not quite at the regular at the Comedy Store level.
I have a weird feeling about Ian Russo where, like, he just might fucking make it and just might be, like, an A-list celebrity in, like, 10 years, bro. He's just...
Possible.
Who the fuck knows, but he just has that energy.
He could be the next Marc Maron.
I was thinking more of Kirk Fox.
Okay. I mean, Kirk Fox isn't a terribly well-known name, is he?
Parks and Rec?
I guess. I never watched the show, but...
Oh. But, yeah, I don't know, man. He just has that energy about him.
Yeah.
He's an interesting... There's a lot of interesting characters in the LA comedy scene.
Mm-hmm.
Al LaBelle.
Yeah. That is...
just us in the Vons parking lot talking to him.
Yeah. while a group of the biggest group of cockroaches I've ever seen devours a little biscuit on the sidewalk.
Yeah, and he just fucking steps over it like it's nothing. He's Aloe Bell.
For those who don't know, Aloe Bell is a comedian who was big in the 80s. That's when he kind of blew up, and he was on Carson and all this stuff. And then he's kind of not exactly progressed since then from a name recognition standpoint. And Josh Edelman took 5 years and he made a documentary about him. So that came out back over the summer, and it's very interesting.
Yeah, Josh, I've conveyed my love for Josh, but he knows that, like, he was like my first ever open mic host, and it really, he was basically the first guy I ever saw in the LA comedy scene, and it's cool that, like, him just progressing and becoming a better comic, it's just cool to see, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very proud of that guy, fucking director of a documentary on Apple and Amazon, wherever.
I love you
get
saying you're proud of him, and he's literally twice your age.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's your child.
Like he's my child. I'm just, yeah. As a friend, I'm just like, wow, good shit.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
One of my homies just sure. making it, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big project to undertake, and like that day at the improv lab, I just had a big smile on my face. I'm like, dude,
that was a fun show. That was really great.
Yeah, it was a really fun show.
And he's got another one coming up. There's a plug for Josh's show. Another show at the Improv, I believe, is coming up in a couple of Wednesdays. It's called, let's see, you can find Josh Edelman at The Edelmeister on Instagram. His show is called Undiscovered Genius, and it's November 13th.
Okay.
7:30 at the Hollywood Improv Lab. And it's one of these really cool posters where it doesn't say the day of the week, even though that's super helpful. So I'm looking at my calendar.
November.
Yep, that's a Wednesday. So Wednesday, November 17th.
Raj Desai. Interesting.
Yeah, good comics. Lizzie Cooperman, Simon
Gibson. Videos by Malcolm Kellner.
Mm-hmm. Raj Desai, is that? Jeremy McKiernan and Angelica Mackey. Yeah, Nikki Bond.
Have you ever encountered this person? Like, I've just seen her on Instagram, but I've never seen her perform before.
Nikki Bond?
No, this is not Nikki Bond.
I can't see from that distance. Oh, Vanja Rani. No, I've not seen that person.
It's interesting. There's, you know, it's funny. There's like there's a lot of ex porn stars in the comedy scene. I know like two. There's that woman Sarah, I think, older white woman.
Okay. Oh, and no, you're thinking of Sally.
Sally
Mullins.
Sally Mullins, yeah. She's a porn star, ex-porn mm-hmm. star, and Ace Party. I don't know if you know who that is.
No, she might still do porn. I'm not sure. And then there's this guy, Oliver Wong, who I think is director in porn.
Awesome.
By the way, so you saw that name.
Is he the Asian guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I remember him, Jake Lafstein. I wonder what's up with him.
Jake Rafstein?
You know him?
Yeah.
Bald guy?
I don't know him well, but he knows me. I know him.
Good but yeah, guy. Like, it was interesting just to see, like, how these people end up here. Just you know, just porn stars doing comedy. It's just funny to see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a joke for that. It's just like, when you hear Sally Mullins does porn, the first thing you do when you get home is probably Google that. You're just curious, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious. I was curious, and I did.
Yeah.
I'm speaking from experience.
Yeah. I have not Googled her, but that's probably my being gay. That.
Yeah. I mean, I was
there's
curious.
Too much. Oh, by the way, back to that comment about there's too much stuff. I don't think I'm gonna watch Squid Game because
I literally haven't even seen it.
Yeah.
Like that's when you know I don't fall into peer pressure or any of that. It's just like.
Well, and this guy that I'm seeing, he watched it, and he said it's just kind of, like, gruesome and disturbing, which, you know, I've seen disturbing stuff. I don't get too bothered by it, but
a lot of people,
I don't need to invite more of it into my life.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of people my age, like, they can't come up with, like, opinions of their own, and they just follow whatever social media says.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only shows they watch is just popular on Twitter and Instagram and TikTok.
Yeah.
Like, they don't go out and choose and seek what they want to see. It's just... I don't whatever's know, it's popular.
I've always kind of been contrarian. Like when people were into Pokemon and Harry Potter, I never got into that stuff. I feel like I naturally just don't like that type of fanciful stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But also the part of me, a smaller part, just resists what's super popular. And it was never into popular music, for instance. More so older stuff. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of those people, younger people, who are like that have their own tastes that are different from pop culture, right?
Yeah, yeah. There are some, definitely.
Would you call them hipsters, or what do you call those people now?
No, definitely not hipsters. Just like, you know, not following the herd.
Sure.
Yeah, like Squid Game. It's an, I'll probably watch it, but I'm just not like interested. I'm way into Foundation right now. It's such a good show. Do you know who Lee Pace is?
No.
Lee Pace. I mean, he's a pretty famous actor. You might have seen, you've definitely seen his face. There's no way you haven't. He's just one of those guys where you just see his face. He's just in a bunch of stuff.
Sure. I'll look him up. This is an Amazon show?
Yeah, it's an Apple TV show.
Oh, okay. I don't know. There's so many white actors that look very similar to me. This guy looks like 10 different guys to me, this Lee Pace. I can't tell you one thing he's been in.
Look at his IMDb.
Halt and Catch Fire, didn't see it. Ronan the Accuser, didn't see it. Garden, didn't see it. Captain Marvel, I didn't see any of this stuff.
Yeah, just being in Marvel just sets a lot of eyes in you. But yeah, it's a great show. It's gonna be critically acclaimed pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
It's missing a few elements to be a really popular show, but it's a great show, man. It just makes you think. It's fucking
Isaac Asimov. He was a thinker.
Oh,
he wrote Foundation.
Yeah, you knew about that?
One of my smartest friends, Jason Gans, shout out, is a big Isaac Asimov fan. So I've heard about him. I think I've maybe read excerpts of his and lots of quotes, but science fiction, it's not, again, not my thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. I'm trying to see. You like a lot of realistic stuff. Like I'm trying to think. So
Marty Scorsese.
Curb is one of your favorite shows, right? Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, that's one of the top. Succession, all those.
Succession, dude, like, damn, I gotta watch it. I'm interested by Macaulay Culkin's brother, Kieran Culkin.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like his movies are great.
Yeah, he's good. Brian really Cox as the head of the household, he's terrific, being Logan Roy.
Yeah.
Logan Roy. Kendall, you fucking piece of shit. What are you doing? I can't have you as my fucking son. Fuck off. That's like half the show. That's the dialogue is Brian Cox saying, fuck off.
Fuck off. Eventually, I'll watch it. I'm a binger, so once I'm in it, I see it all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dude, what's the thing? What was I thinking about you? So like, you know, producing a show. Mm-hmm. Platinum package. Mm-hmm. What does that entail? Booking people and
producer is such a fucking lofty term. But Ryan the Cable Viewer and I, we co-produce these platinum package shows. I actually came on after he started the platinum package series, where he basically did shows at Burt's Backroom and Fourth Wall, and you know, would have some comics on, sell some tickets, maybe sometimes free shows, I think, and maybe have some drinks. Now we have basically the same format where we book comics. Ryan books most of the comics because he is at a lot more open mics than I am. And he'll hang out at like the Improv Bar where he booked Moses Storm. So we got him for the headliner spot last month, which was very cool because he ran half of his set for his HBO special, which he just taped last week.
I've seen Moses, yeah.
Have you seen him run his material?
I think so, yeah. He was practicing for his taping, and he's great, actually. Like, I sent him a message on Instagram, and we talked a bit. And,
oh, that's cool.
And I just remember him being very... He has a really good energy about stand-up. He does it the right way.
Yeah, he is extremely talented.
I have nothing bad to say about him. He's mm-hmm. great.
Very, very talented.
Very polished.
And... yeah, that's pretty much the show. I was able to secure Eddie Pepitone early this year through a friend of mine, Steve Lally. Shout out Steve Lally and the No Idea Zone. But that was really cool. He was a big name. And ever since him, I think it's been a little easier to get relatively bigger names, you know? So sometimes it just takes that. It takes that knowing one person who knows somebody, and that's a foot in the door. And you might have to
rule pay. Rule 7. 6 degrees of separation, right, exactly. 7 degrees of separation. Yeah, that's all comedy is, really.
Yeah, LA especially, it's a small scene, relatively speaking. I mean, you know somebody who knows somebody who is at the biggest level.
Connecting yourself to like a top comedian is not that hard. Mm-hmm. It's like a difference of like 2 or 3 people.
Yep.
Like, if you know, like, I don't know, just, like, I don't know, like, just, for example, like, how we met Fahim Anwar.
Yeah.
That's one guy to Rogan, one guy to Dave Chappelle.
Sure.
So mm-hmm. it's not far off.
Not at all.
So it just takes a lot of time and effort to get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been keeping up with Fahim?
No, I honestly...
He's a writer now.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen... I saw him on Instagram. He posted that he was on the set of like an NBC show or ABC show.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know what... I think it's NBC, but yeah, it's called United States of Al, and he's the writer behind that show.
Very cool.
So yeah, he landed a 9-to-5 that pays very well. So.
Good for him.
And in the comedy-ish scene, so I guess his, mm-hmm. his parents are happy with it, and he's happy yeah. with it, so that's where he's going to be doing for a while now.
Because he, like, studied to be a doctor, right? Was he actually...
No, I studied engineer.
Oh, okay. There's a couple
Ken
comics.
Jeong.
Yeah, Ken Jeong. There's a couple other comics, I think, were doctors or something, but there's that guy. It was a nurse, Stephen Ho. Yeah, I could only imagine... Those parents want a little stability in his life.
Yeah, I mean, just having a 9-to-5, it's good for him. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I think he's approaching 40, and he's getting his life together. Like from what I'm hearing from his podcast, like I think his parents.
He's so talented. Oh my god!
His parents are pushing marriage and stuff. So yeah, it's gonna be interesting, man.
Yeah, are they gonna arrange his marriage?
I don't know. I don't think Fahim's in that culture, but they're Fahim. You know, he's a good looking guy. Great job.
Would your parents arrange your marriage?
Probably, yeah.
When would that happen?
It's when I make a lot of money. Because like in give that culture, you have to make like $100,000 a year or you're just not even in the running.
That's wild.
Yeah, basically. I mean, you know, I'm you know, generalizing, but you do have to have a nice job, make solid money to, you know, like the other family's like, okay, you can marry our daughter because you're going to have a nice car, a nice house.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's you just need a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
I mean, I'm sure that goes for all. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, even like white people, they don't want your daughter marrying some guy who has no prospects, who doesn't have a job. Like, that's a universal thing, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, there's not a formal arrangement in most cases, but
yeah,
I think all parents definitely want their kid to go to somebody who will be good for them in the long term.
Yeah, and so usually I record. For about an hour, that's the sweet spot of all awesome. Podcasts, I
yeah.
feel like.
Yeah, I think
that's,
you're right.
That's the sweet spot from what I've learned. And yeah, like, so I'm ending the podcast right now. Thank you so,
my
so
pleasure.
Much for
thank
being
you
on
for
my
having
podcast.
Me.
And thank you for inviting me to your very, very nice apartment.
Thank you, Armand, for coming over.
In the heart of LA. And you guys can find Nick Linsmeyer at Linsmeyer, Linsmeyer. He has a podcast that he's on called the Cable Time Podcast on Apple, Spotify, mm-hmm. wherever you guys find your podcasts. He has a Platinum Package monthly.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
That's about it. You can follow me at my last name, Linsmeyer, spelled Linsmeyer.
I'll leave it in the description.
Yeah, the show notes. And yeah, I'm just grateful, Armand. Thanks for doing this. And you're one of the nicer people in comedy and just very genuine. So I just say keep it up.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. I just got to keep at it and be genuine and nice to people.
It really, honestly, that goes
a long way.
Yeah, a long way.
Yeah, just don't be hated in the community and I should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, thank you again, Nick. And that was the Courtesy Flush Podcast.
Peace.
Thank God we're alive. Allahu Akbar, homie.
Yeah.